All right. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the No Code SaaS podcast with me, Kieran, No Code Life, and James Devenport. This is the show where we talk about our experience and experiences building SaaS projects with no code tools. My SaaS is yep.so, landing page builder, and James's is Userloop, which is a Shopify app to help people get reviews and questionnaires for their stores. Sorry, I totally hashed that up. Sorry, James. You might want to explain that better, but I'm sure everyone knows by now exactly what we're working on, or I hope.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. So it's probably been pretty busy weekend for both of us, really, with in different ways, with Black Friday being on such a busy time, particularly for my app. It is one of those times when you kind of think about the whole scaling thing, but yeah, no, it's great to be back. We're doing this as another live episode as well, by the way. So, yeah, feel free to ask us questions and comments or anything throughout the episode, and we'll kind of deal with it live. But I guess should we start off with just a couple of updates on what we've been working on that over the last few weeks?
Yeah, well, I'd love to hear. Yeah, what have you been up to with Userloop, and what did you do for Black Friday?
Yeah, so. Yeah, it's been very, very busy. So it's been a bit of I think like a lot of e-commerce apps, we have a feature freeze, which starts kind of at least a week before Black Friday. So no changes in the app at all over the last kind of week. But preceding that, we did launch a couple of new features, particularly the Meta Conversion API. I wanted to get in there before Black Friday. So that was letting people who run surveys send all the survey data to Meta to help improve their ad targeting. So that's been really good. But yeah, over the last few weeks, I've taken more of a focus back to marketing. So I've started doing a series of kind of customer interviews, podcasts that I've been recording with users of the product. And I'm going to be starting to put those out this week. So trying to make more of a kind of a content play around e-commerce and the product. And I've actually been blown away by some of the stuff that you know, customers have said in these interviews, really interesting stuff, trying to get to the bottom of best practice, basically on how to actually use, you know, how to survey customers. So that's been really good. So yeah, a bit more of a marketing focus. It is going to shift more into product building again over the next kind of 2 weeks. I've got a bit of a backlog of stuff I want to be working on. And again, yeah, I've been working on a couple of other products as well in the meantime, which has been super exciting. So yeah, nice to have a kind of a broad palette of stuff to be working on at the moment. What about you?
Yeah, that sounds great. I mean, that idea of interviewing your customers and finding out how they're using your product, and I'm sure at the same time getting loads of really good clips from them on how much they like your product, which you can then repurpose all over the place, that is just a brilliant idea. And I feel like everyone should be doing this is, you're talking to your customers, you're getting feedback, you're getting testimonials, getting content. It's like, yeah. And obviously I'm assuming you're going to use AI to repurpose all of this stuff in 100 different ways, right?
Yeah, and I've actually been blown away by just the results of that. So just taking the transcript from the interviews and putting it into ChatGPT, it seems to be able to deal with much longer stuff, much longer inputs than it did previously. So yeah, I've put in the entire transcript of the interviews, and then it will give me a list of testimonials, timestamps of interesting clips to edit out, to put together, and then even turn it into a blog post, write all the social posts for it. So I'm really, really coming around to having video be my main source of content, like the original source, and then you spin out all these other formats out of that, using AI, like you say. And it's really been a bit of an eye-opener to me, if starting with video is making, you know, streamlining the whole kind of marketing workflow. And of course, it's great to have video content to put out there. So I'm excited to see how this performs over the next kind of couple of weeks. But yeah, this whole reformatting of content has been huge. The other thing I think I tweeted about I think we spoke about a while ago, was doing support documentation in exactly the same way. And that has been another kind of massive, massive realization for me. So when I'm shipping a new feature, so a good example is the meta feature that we're just talking about. When I shipped that, I recorded a walkthrough demo of how to use the feature, took the transcript from that, and then wrote everything from the support center documentation through to the social posts announcing the feature, everything. Like it, and again, it all started with the transcript from the video. So that to me is super, super exciting, because it feels like you're doing the work of like four people all of a sudden, just starting with video and then reformatting it. So yeah, it'd be interesting to, I might kind of write a little bit about this in the next few weeks, because it has been really, really interesting how that is easing the burden of content creation, you know, for support, social, everything. So yeah, that's been really interesting.
Yeah, that's amazing. I mean, I think it's a really, really undervalued thing that actually not enough people are doing. But like, my wife has just been doing something very similar for Chad from Better Legal, because she's a filmmaker, but she's obviously like, yeah, working remotely. And he said, just can you interview like a load of my customers who've left good reviews? And so she jumps onto a Zoom call with them. She records the call. She just asks them about how they've used the product and gets their feedback. Always gets loads of really nice little clips that she can then edit together into like a little case study video, like a 1 minute thing that goes on the front of the Better Legal website. But yeah, it's just so convincing and compelling when you have someone, just a regular person who's like using the tool, just saying, oh, this is actually really, really good. It's way better than, you know, just reading a tweet or something. So, and then obviously you can repurpose all that content, as you just said. So I think, yeah, everyone should be doing this. But it's great that you actually are doing it, because I don't really know many other people that are doing that.
I think it's just because it's only just becoming possible, isn't it? It's like, it feels like only within the last month that ChatGPT has been able to accept these much, much longer inputs, like to take an entire transcript of a, you know, half an hour long video and then take action on that. So it felt, maybe it's because it's all so new. I only tried it just out of curiosity and then was kind of blown away. I mean, I've seen a couple of tools are building bits of this in. Descript has an AI feature which does some of this. I mean, the other thing is, I found it super useful for is writing the description for the YouTube video, because you know there's a format like that you ideally have those in with like your sign up links and all the social links and everything, and it can format all of that for you. So write the description for the video and put in all your sign up and social links and everything in the description,
And also the timestamps as well, right? Because if you want the chapter markers to show up in YouTube, you need to put in those timestamps.
Absolutely, yeah. And literally all I'm doing is getting the transcript of the video out, or using, there's a couple of online services. Like Descript is great if you're not doing that much per month. I think on the free tier, you can transcribe like a couple of hours or something for free and get the text out. So you can take the text from there and put it in ChatGPT. Or there's a ton of online services where you can just upload your audio and transcribe it. I mean, I was kind of half tempted to build an app to do it, because just using the OpenAI Whisper API, because I couldn't find anything quite, you know, that was specifically geared up for this, where you put in the output from an episode and get out the other end all this other formats, so you tell the app, you'd put in everything about your channel or your business, and then it would do all the nice formatting for you. So that might be a little side project that I might experiment with, because it would just be useful for me anyway. But yeah, it's kind of exciting to see all of this becoming possible.
Yeah, absolutely. What is your current workflow in terms of like recording and transcribing?
Yeah, so I've been using this platform a lot more, actually. So we're on StreamYard at the moment. So I'm using this also for my all the interviews I've been doing. So I take the video files from this and put them into Descript. get out of that the transcript, then taking that transcript, putting it into ChatGPT. And then I've got a couple of kind of canned prompts that I'm using to do things like write the YouTube channel video description with timestamps, do the Twitter post, do the LinkedIn post, and then do a blog post about it as well. And depending on the content, I will also then do like a support center article and output into Markdown. So that just goes straight into my support tool. And it works, yeah, amazingly well. Like it's like as an indie hacker or, you know, building a tool yourself, keeping your documentation up to date is really tough. Like that's sometimes someone's full-time job just to do that. So this is one thing that I found is making kind of that whole process easier, especially when you're iterating the product quickly, to be able to just quickly jump on, record a video, and get it out the other side, support article and everything is amazing. The other tool I would give a shout out to, which is awesome, is Teller. So I use that. It's a bit like a Loom competitor, but I use that for all my, that I host all of my kind of customer facing videos on that. So support, tutorials. And what I love about that is you can just export straight out of that a subtitle file. So it does all the transcription for you. So, yeah, that's kind of been my workflow for that. It's still, I think it could be like I'm expecting an app to come out that will stop you having to copy and paste between all these different things. But yeah, even that is just, you know, it's not too hard and it's saving a lot of time, and it's pretty good output as well.
Okay, so if you paste a transcript from the script into ChatGPT, how does it know the time codes?
So yeah, it depends on the export that you get. For that one, I was getting those files out of Teller, which have is a subtitle file that has the timestamp. But I think ChatGPT can also if you tell it the length of the video, it can basically estimate the timestamps based on the length. Okay. So even if there aren't timestamps there, you can say the video was 30 minutes long. Give me, you know, an estimated timestamp, just, you know, by working out how many words there are and kind of putting it up by that. It's not as accurate, obviously, but I think Descript does some of that itself. I think that it has a YouTube timestamp generator into it. It didn't seem quite as good as GPT-4 to me. So maybe it's on a previous version or something else. But it's definitely one to try out.
Yeah. Okay. That's brilliant. Very, very good tip. In terms of my update, I haven't done anything on yep.so for quite a while. And there is a reason for that, but I can't talk about it yet, but I will definitely be talking about it in the near future. But in the meantime, I have been building another fun project, which could be a SaaS. So basically I wanted to build a AI powered form builder that, you know, you'd say, oh, I want a form to, you know, see how many people are coming to my birthday party, and then it would just generate all the questions that you'd need, and then you just share a link. So essentially it's a ChatGPT wrapper, but it's one that you can then share and get the responses back from people and save them. But then I started doing it, and then I actually kind of pivoted it, and it's become a tool where you can spin up a conversational chatbot, but you give it a prompt and a personality and everything. So it's effectively a mock interview tool now. Not necessarily mock, it's an interview tool. So you can say, you are an HR manager, interview these candidates for this job, and you paste in a job description, and then you share the link. The person clicks on the link, they see a chatbot, and it speaks out loud and puts the text, and then you can either type your response or you can speak into it, and it uses Whisper to transcribe it and then responds in audio and in text. So my idea was, So you can use it for like interviewing people. Say you wanted to interview one of your customers, you could just send them a link and it would ask them like dynamic questions, you know, based on what they're saying. It would, not everyone is answering the same questions. It would intelligently alter the interview based on the responses. And you can obviously tell it, I want you to like really drill down and get information. If someone's not giving you good answers, you can keep following up. But the idea I had was that people who are job seeking could use it to do practice interviews. So, you know, your interview skills are obviously like an important thing to have. And will probably, if you're good at interviewing, you'll probably earn a lot more money over your lifetime than someone who's just terrible at interviewing, even if you have everything else is exactly the same. But there's no real way to practice interviews without just doing loads of job applications. So I figured like you could put in your job description and just do like 20 practice interviews, and it's going to ask you different questions every time. And then it can give you feedback at the end to say you were bad on these things. You need to improve your answers for this. So yeah, that's what it does. And I actually recorded a couple of demo videos of it, and then I've sent it to some friends who are recruiters and said, do you think this would be useful? And one of them's put me in touch with her boss, so I'm going to hopefully meet him this week and just see if it would be something that they would use, because my idea is like I could sell it to recruiters rather than getting individual job seekers to pay for it. I could get recruiters to purchase it, and then they could use it for all of their clients, because obviously they want their clients to do well in interviews, because then they get some commission. So yeah, that's what I've been working on. And then apart from that, yeah, Black Friday, I did like some offers on my courses and stuff, and did a bit of the dreaded marketing for that. But it went okay. And it was kind of fun in the end. Yeah, I think that's about it. Had COVID as well, recovered. Almost recovered.
Well, no, I think that sounds like a really interesting project to be working on with the form builder. I mean, I think there is a lot of space still for well-made GPT wrappers, basically. I think it's a little premature for everyone to be panicking that, OpenAI is going to be killing your business every 6 months, because, you know, I think that's going to be kind of the nature of working with anything to do with AI, is it's going to be continually changing and disrupting. And, you know, I think there's going to be a place for well-made wrappers, particularly with the assistance API. I've been experimenting a bit with that, that was announced a few weeks ago alongside GPT-4 Turbo. And that seems super, super promising. And the multimodal APIs as well. I think it's still wrapping my head around the possibilities of what to do, you know, what is now possible with that, you know, being able to put in images and get kind of understanding of what's in the image and stuff like that. So, yeah, I think there's tons of potential for making useful apps, because I think we kind of forget that the bubble that we are probably all in a bit on Twitter with, you know, being very up to date with what's happening with AI isn't really what the general population is, you know, and a lot of people maybe have tried ChatGPT but aren't using it in their day-to-day lives. So, you know, even like my app, for example, that has it integrated, people use that feature all the time to write survey questions. And they probably wouldn't be doing that directly in ChatGPT, because ChatGPT doesn't have all the knowledge of their specific brand and product range and everything that I can feed to it. By wrapping it up in my own product. So, yeah.
Well, I was speaking to a friend at the weekend who's an architect, and I was, you know, we were talking about AI, and he was saying no one in his office has even heard of ChatGPT, let alone used it, let alone using custom GPTs, or they're certainly not going to look at an app and say, this is just a ChatGPT wrapper, I'm not going to use this, I'll just use ChatGPT, because they've never heard of it, and they likely will not have used it in 10 years time. So I think, yeah, as long as you just lean outside of this bubble we're in, you'll find tons of opportunities for industries that are just going to be very, very slow to adopt anything to do with AI.
That's it. And I think the magic comes, you know, of trying to build these wrappers with putting high quality info into OpenAI, because I think sometimes just trying to use ChatGPT is too general. It doesn't have the full context. Whereas now with this, the assistance API, and even with the GPT-4 Turbo, where you can have these massive amounts of tokens, you can send it much more relevant information about the user and like do stuff that's very tailored to them. Like I've been experimenting with a little personal trainer bot that you just upload everything about you specifically into, and it's just absolutely amazing what it comes out with. So like specific use cases like that, where you can, you know, you're not just wrapping the API like that, I think is low quality and isn't, you know, really adding any value. It's where you're taking the OpenAI API and some proprietary data set that you have, like whether it's about the user or some speciality knowledge that you have, and then merging those two together. And then that seems to be where you can build some really, really interesting stuff that is way, way better than just using ChatGPT. I think that feels like it's going to be the case for a while, at least for the next year, until OpenAI's next kind of big event, which sounds like it will be huge, I imagine, despite all of the kind of recent turmoil with all of that. It's just from a cost perspective, GPT-4 Turbo is is a bit of a game changer. I don't know if you've experimented with it yet. I've done some tests. Just it is extremely promising. I think the only issue I have with it at the moment is the reliability. A lot of the calls were failing, I think, just maybe because it was under so much demand, but it's not a full production version of it yet. So that's going to, I think they've said by the end of the year, should be kind of production ready. But yeah, some really, really interesting. It's just, again, I'm kind of a bit of a victim of the indie hacker mindset that we all have. Is like, I want to go out and build loads of new apps and use all of this new stuff, but I'm really trying to be restrained and keep focused on my one, or and think of ways I can apply this new stuff to my existing app, rather than going and, you know, building another too many new things and spreading myself thinly. Because I know like we've spoken about before, the small bets thing. But yeah, I feel me personally, I get too spread thin, so I try and focus more on single projects at the moment. But it's unbelievably tempting to go and try other things with all of this new stuff coming out.
Well, you are, out of everyone I know, you're one of the best people at focusing I've ever met. I did an interview on James McKinven's Indie Bytes podcast last week. I don't know if he's going to put it out, because he said basically at the moment he records episodes with people, but then he will decide later on if it's interesting enough to put out. And I was like, yeah, fair enough. If it's not interesting, please don't put it out.
Yeah.
But I was just excited to meet him, because I just listen to all his podcasts, and I have done for ages. But yeah, you know, we had an interesting chat about no code, and he had some preconceptions misconceptions, shall we say, about no code and its scalability and all this stuff. But yeah, there was definitely a point where it felt like he was giving me quite a long lecture about how I need to focus on one thing, and yeah, I couldn't argue with him, because he knows. He's interviewed so many founders, and he said, I see patterns, and I see the ones who do really well are the ones that are focused on one thing and go all in on that, and the ones who are like scattered around loads of things do not make it. And I was like, yeah, you're right. I've heard this many times. We discuss this almost every podcast episode we do. But yeah, there is some method to my madness. I think, given that I am also trying to teach people, and part of my business is like educating, it's in my interest to also be learning new skills and building new apps and then teaching people the skills I've learned. So it does give me an excuse to play around with all the new APIs and everything that come out, because then I can stick them on YouTube and stuff like that.
So I think, you know, and that's something I'm kind of cognizant of as well, is like, it feels like this is such a huge moment in, you know, it's a transitional moment in technology that it's really important to try and stay up to date with what's happening, because it is changing so often. And you know, the possibilities of what you can do with building an app are changing very rapidly. So I really try and keep really up to date with what's happening, mostly from an AI perspective, into like, how can I put this into my app to do something very interesting, you know, really delight customers. And I have a ton of ideas of stuff that I want to do I feel like with this most recent update of GPT-4 Turbo are doable. But it's another interesting point that you raise about the whole no code. I mean, I've been seeing this on Twitter a lot, that, you know, people being anti no code or whatever. It seems like a bit of a silly, it's this debate that's going on constantly. You know, I think there's this preconception that no code tools are low quality and useless, which is, it's just such a, it really is a strange, it's a very outdated point of view in my view. And it's precipitated by some other platforms as well. I don't know if you saw this discussion recently about there was a startup app marketplace that has banned any software built with Bubble, for example. They won't list it. Yeah, because they say it's like, oh, it's low quality. Like, this is a slightly outdated viewpoint, I would say. And I feel like Bubble probably have some more work to do in trying to educate the marketplace about, you know, the quality of what can be built with Bubble, because I think there is still this perception out there that it is low quality, which isn't the case, obviously, particularly with all of these new AI changes. So,
I think the issue is, it's fairly new technology. I think I worked out there are, on like GitHub, there are like 100 million users or something. So, you know, there's a lot of coders out there, and on Bubble, there's like, what, 1 million or 2 million users or something. So there's 1/100th of the amount of people doing it for maybe 1/4 of the time. You're just not going to have as many standout unicorn apps, or you probably wouldn't expect to have any with those kind of numbers. And because Bubble is way more accessible as well, you're getting people who have never thought about building software before, maybe don't know much about it at all, and they're suddenly able to build something, but they haven't spent a long time studying it, they don't know about design and things like that, and so you do end up with a load of kind of low quality apps. But that's just because the people who are building them are just any old person, which is a wonderful thing that they can build an app. But you may then get the idea that all no code apps look terrible and are not scalable and really bad. But it's, you know, if you look at the apps that are actually built well by people who know how to design, then I think you'll really struggle to tell them apart from apps built with code. And likewise, if you look at all the apps built with code that are built badly or designed badly, you could come away easily thinking there's millions of apps out there built with code that are really awful, because I'm sure there are, but you just don't really see them because the ones we tend to use are built by gigantic teams with loads of funding.
Exactly, yeah. And I think that's a great illustration of why it's such a nonsensical comparison. You get tons and tons of apps built with code that are awful. Just because it's built with code does not mean it's well made or superior to some other technology stack. I mean, I feel like any app can be built well or badly, irrespective of what technology stack it's on, just because it happens to be built on a stack that you maybe haven't used before, or you don't, you know, like for example Bubble, if you've not used it, or you've maybe seen an app built 5 years ago with it, like you think everything on it is bad, is not reflective of the current state of it. And you know, I think this debate I think will just disappear over the next year or two, as the lines between code and no code are fairly meaningless at this stage anyway, when you've got like the top AI researchers who are saying they're using like GitHub Copilot to write big chunks of their code now. It's like, okay, so at what point does that become no code, when it's you've actually got getting software being written by a large language model? It becomes a less meaningful kind of division between the two, I think, but also super exciting. I think, you know, anyone who's listening to this or is building with Bubble, it's probably seen, you know, this is the way to go, I think, to build any kind of software product to start with, whether you're a programmer or not, because you can get something out there very quick of high quality and validate whether this idea of yours has legs, like without having to raise tons of money or, you know, be a computer science like whiz. You can do it without all that. So yeah, it's interesting times, definitely.
Yeah, and one thing that Chad said to me when I was talking to him about this is, and he also mentioned this when he was on stage at BubbleCon, is that, you know, Salesforce was like the original no-code tool, and you can basically build custom apps in Salesforce. And I've watched some videos actually about how you do it. So you like create your database types and create the fields and stuff like that, and then you design like dashboards, but it's incredibly limited on the UI. You really have to use their stock UI, and then you can just be like, okay, I want to be able to have a form here and do this, but you can't really edit anything about how it looks. But you can create fully custom apps, and that's what, you know, almost every big, really big enterprise in the world has done. They use Salesforce and they get someone in their team to create custom apps. And, you know, Salesforce has scaled, I would say. And these big companies are happy with it, even though it looks terrible. So if that's the precursor to Bubble, there's no reason to say that Bubble can't get just as big as Salesforce.
No, absolutely. I think that, you know, at BubbleCon, Chad got a huge round of applause when he was saying, yeah, Bubble's going to take a huge chunk of Salesforce's market share. And I can definitely, you know, see that happening, because there is no like a dip in the appetite for people to have software built like that. That is an exponential, like there is not enough software in the world in general to do things. A lot of people are still using spreadsheets or bits of paper like to do things. There is a massive need for software, so more people can build it, I think, is you know, overall a good thing. So yeah, super exciting times, I think. And tools like, it's not just Bubble, there's others in the ecosystem, like Retool in particular is another one that I think is you know, particularly aimed at that kind of business market. And I was also just shocked at how big Microsoft's Power Apps, I think it is, that's huge as well, way bigger than I ever kind of thought it was. So yeah, it feels like there's a bit of a blue ocean of opportunity there.
Yeah, definitely. And I used to work in banking, and you know, they had revenues of like millions and millions, like every day, and the whole app that they were using was built on Excel. The whole thing was just glued together with Excel and some VBA, like absolute no code. Okay, maybe a bit of VBA, but it's like totally like glue and string and stuff holding it together. Like if that can scale and work for a bank who has like loads of money, then there's no reason to say that you couldn't do the same thing or better with Bubble.
Absolutely. And you know, I'm optimistic that over the next 6 months, a year, we're going to have some good announcements from Bubble on their scalability of their data. Like, I think that was something that was addressed at BubbleCon, which has been a topic we've discussed a lot, and it is one of the limitations of tools like Bubble right now, is that when you do get to very, very, very large data sets and you want to do certain kind of computations, it is not the fastest. But as we've discussed before, that means you can just use a third party database like Superbase or TinyBird or Xano or whatever. So, but you know, it would be nice to see that natively in the Bubble platform itself, and they are working on it. So excited to hear more about that. But yeah, I think that was on my wish list, so I'm glad that that's been worked on.
Yeah. Yeah, looking forward to those announcements.
Cool. So we're coming up to probably just over half an hour. So would you have any other updates or topics you wanted to
talk about? No, I think we're good.
Awesome. Well, I think this was a great episode. I think along the lines of what we were talking about earlier, what we'll do after this episode is we're going to take the transcript of this podcast and all of the social posts and episode descriptions and everything that you see are going to be written by AI. So we're going to put in this transcript. Excellent. And see what kind of summaries we get out. But so you'll probably see it under the episode. But yeah, it's that was that's super cool. So we will have it out very quick. But great to talk to you today, Kieran, and we'll be back
Likewise.
Soon.
Likewise. Yep. Take it easy.
Cheers.